This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Hello, hello, my Let's Keep It Real people. Are you in for a treat today? I cannot wait to bring on Sarah Losi. I hope I got that right. Sarah
nailed it.
Yes. Before I do that, I just want to shout out. Thank you. Thank you for supporting me in spite of me. Thank you for sharing my TEDx talk. Thank you for reminding me to tell people you are the best humans in the entire world. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now, let's talk about Sarah. Sarah is an award-winning author, marketer, and brand architect with a knack for turning narratives into connections. You know, I love this. Through Favorite Daughter Media, gotta know how she came up with the name. She works with businesses and entrepreneurs to help them develop their brand stories and connect with their audiences. Her book, Open This Book, The Art of Storytelling for Aspiring Thought Leaders, is now available on Amazon. Sarah, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
All right, so let's get to it. One word. You get to pick one word that best describes your past 30 days and then watch pick it. What pops into your head?
Exhausting.
Oh. let's dive deep into that. I'm ready.
So exhausting. But in a good way, for the most part. It has been so busy. I'm only 2 months out from having launched my book. So a lot of still doing some book launch celebrations. I have a bunch of client projects I'm working on that are really big. And just this past weekend, I had my 1.5-year-old niece staying with me for 4 days.
Ooh.
And I did not realize how exhausting toddlers are.
Oh.
So I'm still recovering.
Of course you are.
Still recovering.
Oh yeah, you don't sit, man. You don't sit.
No. I love her more than anything, but she needs a Xanax or something.
No, you love her. You're happy to have her, but you're also, here you go.
Absolutely adore that child. She is a lot of energy.
Well, now I know why you said exhausting. And you're right. Your book has only been out a few months. Whoa.
Yes. It launched yesterday. Was actually exactly 2 months. It was April 25th, the perfect day.
Okay, we'll get into that. All right, so back up. I have so many questions. First one, favorite daughter. Are you the favorite daughter? Are
you absolutely. The
favorite do you have sisters and how do they feel?
Oh, absolutely. I do have one sister, so it is a very prominent, just like it's me, not you. But I named it favorite daughter, not even so much after myself as the favorite daughter, but because my relationship with my father is probably my favorite relationship. So I kind of named it more as an homage to him, but I also love it because it's a conversation starter and it's memorable. And the amount of fun I've been able to have by just incorporating it into my brand story and my brand messaging. Like if you look on my website, I don't have testimonials. I have love notes from happy parents.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't have a blog. I have a diary. Like the ways that I've just been able to really go all out with the branding of it has been so much fun.
I must admit, when I looked you up, because we met on Podmatch. I love Podmatch.
We did. Shout out Alex.
And I was like, okay. She's beating her own drum. Like she's really separating herself out. So this is a good thing that you're doing this for a living.
Yeah, it's funny. I have another company called Branded and we are all about building branded podcasts and everything. And people tell us all the time, wow, I really love your branding. Your branding is so great. We're like, thank you. That's the point. We need to make ours good so you know we can do it.
Yeah, it's like somebody trying to tell you how to make money, but they're broke.
Mm-hmm. Nope. If we're telling you how to make money, we've got to have it.
Exactly right. All right. Take us back. Take us back to how you got into this. Tell us you went to school to be a doctor and then you switched it up.
I actually went to school to be a FBI agent. Oh, I wanted to be a profiler for the FBI. It was a little different. I was psychology and criminal justice because I wanted to get a PhD in criminal psych. And that did not last long. I think I changed sophomore year when I interned with the FBI and hated it. So I actually have degrees in psychology and mass communications advertising. So
That's good.
I went a little bit of a different direction.
Yeah.
But before that, I was going to go to culinary school. So I was all up in the map.
Okay. And then eventually you came out the other side.
I graduated, started working at an ad agency. I had a client in the finance space that I hated working with because I hated finance, ended up becoming their director of marketing unexpectedly and did that for a couple of years, fell in love with finance somehow, became an accredited financial counselor and went independent a few years later and still kind of have that niche in finance, but I work with all different industries now and it's been a little bit all over the place. Definitely a windy road to get here.
Yeah. But I'm so glad you did get here because even when we were talking a little bit before this, not only did you have a smile on your face talking about your brand and pink and why you were doing pink and you lifted your mug, you lifted the keyboard and it made you feel good inside. I could feel it. But you also, when we were talking about other people, you did the same thing. Yeah. And that made me really happy to see that because you like doing it for yourself, but you also like finding that for someone else. It's almost like in a different way. I was just speaking right before you to a woman that likes to go in and style someone with clothes before they go to a speaking engagement or, you know, a gala, and it builds your confidence. And it's part of your brand. Like, okay, that's who you are. So Sarah, I got a lot of questions for you.
I have a lot of answers for you.
And some of them. Okay, people, I hear you. I hear you. But some of them were about me, meaning that they were like, dear Sarah, let's go with, we'll call her Sally Bell. Dear Sarah, we love Sandy, but she's all over the
This one feels like an attack.
No, it's fine. I know what they mean. She's all over the place. She's as her friends call her, she's a wingnut.
Okay.
Is there any way that you can help her narrow her message, so which is good, so more people get to hear her? Now, let me give you a little background. I don't have, like, even when I speak, a fractal. You know, some people go, all right, what is your audience? Who is your audience? Where is it? Even in my health club business, you had every walk of life, every age, and I've always made it successful. Every type of workout system, every club. So what they're getting at, and I really want to hear from you, is not that I'm not in a mental and physical well-being space, but I don't have only those colors. Not that I don't have a logo, but it's not like I'm always, when you come out, you see me that way. I'm known, I don't match. I have crazy nails. I say, well, can't that be my branding? You know, is that my branding? Can it be that I don't have a style and that's my style? I don't know, but I really want you to be honest, Sarah. So I'm listening. And that's what I opened up with that because I'm ready.
So when you were, I think it was before we hit record, you were saying how you never match. And I saw that your nails are all different colors. And what I had said when you said that was like, well, that's your brand. And that's completely true. Anytime I go anywhere representing my brand, I'm in all pink. If you look at my website, everything's pink. My business cards are pink. My book is pink. My microphone cover, my headphones, everything is pink because that's my brand. And I 100% think that that is fine. If you want your brand that every time you show up, you're in different patterns, different colors, do it 100%. What you do, no, you're nailing that. But what I would suggest is it's not necessarily you need to rein in you. Like, you are you, keep doing you, being you is your superpower. What you want to rein in with the messaging is really just understand like who that target audience is. And I know you just kind of said you don't have one, but you do.
Mm.
And it's really important to understand who it is. And it doesn't have to be a target audience based on demographics. It doesn't have to be it's moms in their 30s and in this location. It can be psychographically. It can be people who really want to focus on this topic. It's people who are really interested in this kind of message. That can be your target. And by
I'm gonna come to Texas and hug you.
You are more than welcome here, but bring air conditioning. It is awful.
Yes. So yes. Okay, I'm gonna calm down. Why? Thank you for saying that. Because, and I was just on another call earlier this morning, and they are like, "What is your target audience?" And I mean this. One day, I could speak at a corporation because the children aren't getting along, meaning the employees, you know, tension is high, blah, blah. They bring me in to calm down anxiety. The next day I could be speaking at a college for the same thing. Mm-hmm. Mental fitness, anxiety, stress, around. Next day I could be speaking at a school for quarter boarded kids who need mental toughness. So I do have my audience.
You do.
All about mental and physical well-being and people that are seeking self-growth. It doesn't have to be. Wait, can I get back on that call with those people who I didn't have the answer for? I'm going to email them and say, okay, here's my audience. All right, say that again, Sarah. I'm going to write it down. No, for people out there that feel the same way, because I really want, because that was powerful, because there's more people that are like me. So go ahead.
Your audience does not have to be based on demographics. It can be based on psychographics.
That's huge. Let's put that everywhere. Okay, now let's dig a little deeper what you mean by psychographics again.
So demographics are, I call them kind of like the tangible. Those mm-hmm. are things like age, race, religion, location, income level, things that you can, almost you can know by looking at somebody. Which isn't completely true. You don't know how much someone makes by looking at them, but you understand the idea. Psychographics are the internal factors. Psychographics are the ones based in their psychology. It's the things that they are interested in. It's their ideologies, their beliefs, their behaviors. So they're, whether it's their purchasing behaviors, their spending behaviors, or just their hobbies and things that they enjoy. All of those are going to be psychographic. So you can have an audience that is soccer players. That is psychographic. They enjoy soccer. So things like that, that aren't as tangible.
Gotcha.
Those are going to be those psychographics.
So now the next question, because I know they're going to hit me with it. Is it just as powerful as the demographics? If you have your audience in common, the psychographics.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's almost more. I think demographics have their time and place, but we're getting to a point where society is not split the way that it used to. It's not as black and white. Mm. And it doesn't, if I have a product that I want to sell, I don't care if my audience is 40 or 30. I don't care if they're black, white, Hispanic. If they can resonate with my product, then I want them to be my audience. But whether they resonate with it is going to be based on more of an internal factor. It's what are they doing? Why do they need it?
God. Well, I mean, it's not maybe I didn't hear before, but I'm hearing the message totally different now. It only took me 64 years, but hey, never too late.
It's a marathon, not a sprint.
You never get started. Okay, now, this is a big one, and we had a lot of questions on this, so I want to make sure we dive into it. Understand you have a story and your story is worth sharing, even if it isn't a headline worthy. So many people, I mean, so many people wrote in about this one because, and I hear this all the time too, because when I bring people on podcasts, some people are like, hey, I don't have that story where, you know, I grew up, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I hear it every day.
Oh, and I get it. But to me, I've heard stories of, which is not like the headline story, but of a woman shifting her career after being in a career for 30 years. And she took the leap of faith and went into another complete different career. And that to me was a compelling story.
Mm-hmm. So when someone tells me that they don't have a story, what they're really saying is that their story isn't worth telling. And I think part of, I'm going to go back to what you were saying before, part of not really have knowing what your story is and what to tell can come down to not knowing your audience. Because when you're trying to reach such a broad audience, you have to tell very broad stories. Mm. And the way that I look at this is look at a stand-up comedian, especially a stand-up comedian that's kind of new and they don't have a core audience yet. They don't have their cult following. They're going to tell jokes that are very, very vague. They're going to only talk about the topics that they know everyone in the room is going to recognize. Mm. So they're telling those jokes about airline food and the traffic and those things that they know everyone in that room has dealt with that.
Yeah.
Because it's their job to tell stories that everyone in the room is going to resonate with. So when you're able to narrow down your audience and really understand who you're talking to, you don't have to talk about airline food because every single person knows about it. You can hone in on very specific stories, very specific experiences, because the purpose of telling these stories is to highlight shared experiences, have people realize that something that they have gone through, you've gone through too. They feel a connection with you. They feel like you understand them. But you can't do that if you're talking about something so vague because you're trying to reach everybody. It's going to water down that message.
I'm going to look at comedians in a whole new way now.
Oh, when people ask me, like, what can they do to become a better storyteller? One of the things I always say is go watch stand-up. They are some of the best storytellers in the world because they can do that. Yeah. They can tell a story that gets the entire room to react. Because they do it in a way that makes everybody feel like they know what that experience is.
Mm. Okay. So let's just stay here a little bit longer and go a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
For the people out there, they're saying their audience is broad. I don't have a story. There's nothing that really happened in my life that anyone want to hear about. You hear it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
Where should they get started? How can they get started?
That's a really great question. I think it first starts with a mindset shift.
Okay.
And we live in a 24/7 news cycle. No matter where you look at any time of the day, we are getting hit with headlines. And those are quote unquote newsworthy stories. They've made the news. They are there. They're for everybody to see. Mm. But when you look at those stories, you don't relate to them. You don't look at a story like Malala and think, oh yeah, I know what she's been through. I, as a teenager, stood up for the rights of my entire nation. No, you have not. You don't know what that's like. You can be inspired and awed by her, as okay. everyone should be.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you don't feel that connection because you haven't done it.
Yeah.
So look at stories more as what have you gone through that other people can relate to? And it doesn't have to be sensational, traumatic, or dramatic. That everyone seems to think it has to be. And I mean, I prove this with the main story that I tell is about a stupid tattoo I got when I was traveling. And that tattoo story changed my life and changed my career. You would not hear that on the evening news.
Can you tell the story now?
Of course I can.
I mean, you know, I was going there, you know, I don't know if I could see the tattoo.
I can't, you can see it. It is currently an airplane. Yeah. It used to look like a penis.
Oh, mm-hmm. I can see that. Put it back up again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those people, if you see it, it could be a penis. Absolutely.
If you go to favoritedaughtermedia.com/tattoo, there okay. is a before and after slider.
Oh, well, now you're going to get them there. Okay. I'm ready.
And the entire story is chapter 2 of my book. Okay. But the short version mm-hmm. is I took a solo trip to Ireland when I was, I want to say 22, maybe. Okay. And I was by myself exploring this new country. I was terrified to do it, but I had just gotten out of a bad relationship. I had booked us a trip to Greece to get engaged. He booked himself a one-way ticket to jail, so that didn't happen. And instead, I go to Ireland and I take this week by myself and just have this experience that I never thought I'd have because mm-hmm. I was so dependent on another person. So I spent a week just being alone and relying only on myself. And when I got to the last weekend, I'm in Dublin. I'm bar crawling for about 12 hours through Dublin with a group of strangers. Of course, when in Dublin.
Right.
And me and one other person that I had just met, I think that day or the day before, we went and got tattoos together. And he got a Guinness harp, looked perfect. I got an airplane. It looked like a penis.
Oh my God.
Oops. My bad.
You probably didn't even notice in the state that you were.
No, I noticed.
Oh, you did?
I know. So I usually don't tell people that I was actually sober at the time because somehow it makes me sound worse.
Yeah. Like, why would you allow it to happen?
Uh-huh. Exactly. But no, I was sober. I looked out and saw it immediately. But I go home after 30 days, I get it covered because that's like the minimum you can wait. And now I just have this story of I got a tattoo of a penis while I was in Ireland. Yeah. I was a bartender. I was working at an ad agency and bartending on the side. And I would tell that story when there was someone just sitting at a bar by themselves looking lonely and they needed a laugh. So I would tell that story. That's all I thought that story would ever be. And then fast forward, I'm working in the financial services industry. I'm director of marketing. I'm producing a podcast for the CEO about financial literacy. And I go to a podcast conference and Joe Saul-Sehy is there. He is the host of Stacking Benjamins, which is one of the top finance podcasts there is. And I really wanted to get my host booked on his show as a guest. And I stalk the man for 3 days. And I don't mean stalk as in like, okay, he's over there. Let me go into that room. I mean, I stood at a cocktail table with a book up, pretending to read it. Might as well have cut eyes out of a newspaper. Like that level of
stalking. You're all in, man.
Oh, when I commit to something, you'll have to arrest me to get me to stop. And it almost happened probably. Yeah. But I finally, after 3 days, I approach him. I'm like, yell at. I blacked out a little bit. But I'm like, I've been stalking you for 3 days. If I don't get my host on your show, I'm going to be fired. And he just looked at me. He's like, okay, here's my phone number. Let's meet tomorrow and we'll discuss how to get him on the show. A decision I still question because he should have called security. But I sit down with him the next day.
Determination. He saw your determination.
He felt, I think he was just like, I can't let this girl get fired. I probably looked like I was like 16. I still kind of do. So it just felt bad for me. So we sit down the next day and I give him this whole pitch of Eric is an expert in all of these topics. He's an amazing financial advisor. He's been doing this for 30 years. And he lets me give my whole spiel and then looks at me and he says, yeah, that's great. I don't need an expert. I want someone with a cool story.
Wow.
And I may have had a stroke or something at that moment because what I said next was, do you want to hear about the time I got a tattoo of a penis while I was in Ireland?
Just out of nowhere.
I didn't know what else to say. That was the first thing that came to my mind. And I couldn't just be like, well, Eric has great stories. Like, I don't know them off the top of my head, but I just take my word for it. Yeah. No, I just, here's the first story I can think of. So that's how I accidentally got myself booked on Stacking Benjamins. So I had to tell that story on a top finance podcast. And it was Joe's job as the host to make it about money in some way, make it relevant to his audience in some way.
Yeah. I'm listening.
So he's guiding me he's interviewing me and having me tell this story. He's guiding me through telling it in a way that's pulling out so much value. It's turning it into this journey of self-discovery. It's turning this into finding an opportunity to double my salary, chase after the life I wanted to live and stop settling for less. All of these things that I never saw in that story.
Amazing.
It was amazing. I learned live on that podcast how to tell my story. And now years later, I have an award-winning book that teaches you how to tell your story based on how I learned to tell mine. And that whole story, the long version, is in the book, is chapter 2. But the whole way that I lead people through this book is by using my own stories to teach the concepts. And I never would have even touched on this storytelling topic if Joe didn't teach me how to tell my own story.
And brilliant for Joe. I mean, think about it. He figured out how to make it for his audience, yep, where a lot of people would say, yeah, I can't make this work. I don't even know how to make it work.
I think a lot of them would have just walked away. But I told that on his show about 2 years later. He comes back and talks about it on my podcast. He wrote the foreword for my book. He's become a friend and someone that I really look up to. But
a mentor. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Never thought that was going to happen. And all of this value, all of this stuff that changed my life came from that stupid story. But it was a silly story, but everyone can find something to relate to in it. You've all been in your early 20s. You've all made silly mistakes. You've all gotten your heart broken and did something crazy coming out of the breakup. There's pieces of that that people can relate to. So no, I didn't like go on this trip and end up being mistaken for some princess and then go live in a castle like you see in like the Lizzie McGuire movie and stuff. Like that didn't happen. That would be a headline worthy story. Well, I just got a tattoo. I reached out to Liam Neeson, like asking him, like, be ready in case I do get taken, but he never answered. Thankfully I didn't, but I like, it wasn't a headline worthy story, yeah, but there is still value in it. And there's a quote from, it's Ira Glass, who says, great stories happen to those who can tell them. And that is just such a powerful quote, mm-hmm, because you can turn anything into a great story. You just have to tell it right.
Absolutely. Do you ever hear of the Moth Organization?
Mm-hmm.
So I was fortunate enough. I got up on the stage recently and I took the same thing. I took this challenge. They give you a theme of what it's got to be. And it's about time you had guts. And I wanted to see if I could pick something that maybe is not as visible that you had guts. And make it about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a blast, you know. I didn't win, but I was like a tenth of a point from winning. And it was phenomenal. But what it taught me is the same thing you're saying, because everybody kept saying to me, well, Sandy, you have such a great backstory. You have such a great backstory. I don't. I'm like, you know, I'm going to just take an ordinary thing and show you how I can make it like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's brilliant on your part, and I know it was serendipity, but I love the fact that you're helping people find their story and you don't have this incredible, oh my God, moment, because it's relatable.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helping me, you know, prove the point. Like everyone has stories.
Yep.
Everyone has story. And look how engaged I was. And then, you know, how you met the guy. And then you were so... I love you. Okay.
That's all I love you too.
I love it. This is the right timing for me, baby. And everyone listening out there, come on. I know right now you could think of 5 stories, anything that just even happened in the last month. Think about it. All right. Calm down. All right. So now you set a production company, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just wrote a book. You host podcast?
Yes.
Do you do workshops and speak even, or this is what you home in on?
I speak at, I think last year I spoke at maybe like 8 conferences, and I do some like online workshops, panels, webinars, a lot of podcast guests, spots, and well, yeah, I stay busy.
If you can tell a great story, you got a great, you know, speaking engagement out there, you know, I mean, come on.
Well, the funny thing is I hate public speaking.
So there's that.
Yeah. So I do it. I'm getting to the point that it's not as much of like pulling teeth, but I also used to hate podcast guesting. When I launched my company originally, I launched it to focus on podcast guest coaching because I was in the finance space and seeing all of these guests on podcasts that were not good. And I was like, okay, well, podcasts deserve better guests. How can I make this a better experience for everybody? Because the listeners aren't having a good experience. The host isn't. The producers aren't. And if I can just teach you how to do this a little better, I can make it better for everybody. But I didn't want to do it myself. I'm like, I just want to be on the production side. I want to be
both. I get it. Yeah. Yeah. I understand.
Totally. And now I love it. So maybe someday I will like public speaking, but for now it's only been upgraded to not my mortal enemy.
Ah.
Yeah. Baby steps.
I have friends still right now. They have like panic attacks. Even when they're out there, that was one big anxiety attack, but they slay it.
I black out.
They slay it. But for me, I could be speaking not on camera and my words are like, I don't even make sense. My husband and some of my friends like, could you say that again? But I put a camera on me, or I go on stage. I'm like, I'm at home. Now you just have to help me be more concise and precise.
I got this. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, we'll do that later. Okay, so let's back up a little bit, answer just a few more questions so my peeps feel, you know, good about it.
Hit me.
I love the fact that you already answered the question about the story and it doesn't have to be, you talk about embracing authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
People tell me all the time, you just show up, you're yourself. I mean, I'm going to be the same way no matter who you put me in front of. Yep. This is what you get, right? I don't know any other way. I mean, maybe I wouldn't swear as much depending, you know, if I'm with certain people, like I do that, but this is it.
Yes.
I get asked all the time, how do I do that? How can I just show up being me? And I don't really have a plan. So I'm hoping you do, Sarah. I just go, and this guy, he didn't really like my answer. He said, I don't understand. Like, how do you do that? You know, why do you think you were successful in business with what you did? And I said, I really like myself. He goes, what? I go, I love me. And I don't mean that in that way, but I really like who I am.
No, you should mean it in that way. You should mean it in every way.
Warts and all. Like
we don't have to excuse ourselves for self-love. That is, no.
I like me.
I love myself, period. End of sentence.
So do you have anything more than that for people that come up?
Yes, actually. So,
there we go.
No, I'm kind of in the same boat, but I haven't always been. And like I said, I came out of the financial services world, and financial services is very buttoned up, conservative, like neutral toned polos and khaki pants tucked in on casual Friday. It is not me. And I did not fit in. I spent every day trying to pretend I was this financial professional. And I just wasn't. I have tattoos that are visible. I have piercings. I dye my hair pink because I just feel like it sometimes. And in that world, that makes me like the black sheep. That makes me the one that, okay, well, let's just make sure she's not client facing. Because I wasn't allowed to be myself. It made the company look bad if I was myself. And when I left with a purpose, and I left so that I could launch a company with the plan of giving myself permission to just be myself again. And I became just unapologetically authentic, whether people wanted me to be or not. And I think a lot of it and why people struggle with it comes down a little bit to imposter syndrome. We feel like we need to act like something else. We need to act like what people expect. Mm. And we find ourselves in these rooms or at these tables where people don't act like us. So we don't feel like who we are is acceptable. And what I have found is, honestly, there's another room and there are more tables. You don't have to be in that one. And it's not my job to convince everyone in that room that who I am is okay. It's not my job to try to open a closed mind. I'd rather find another room that already thinks that who I am is okay. So getting past that imposter syndrome and realizing that you belong where you are, and you got to where you are because of who you are, not because of who people expect. It gives yourself permission to just be you. And it's so important because everyone else already kind of exists. You can't be them. And when we're kids, they say to just be yourself, and we don't get it because we think, well, who else could I possibly be?
Yeah, yeah.
But as adults, we want to be everybody else. So it takes a lot of courage to just be you. And it takes a lot of getting past that imposter syndrome. But once you do it, you're going to find the people who resonate with you.
Yeah.
And you're going to learn that you are not for everybody.
Yeah.
Like people like you and me, like who are going to be authentic regardless, we're probably an acquired taste.
Oh, I am.
100% me too.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to acquire me, that is fine. I am not for you. But the people that I am for, I would rather that they love me for who I am than that they love me for some other version. Because honestly, it's a lot of work and exhausting to try to keep that up. When I meet with clients, I meet with them as myself. It feels like two friends getting coffee. Yeah. And that's what I want. I don't want to have to put up this front. It's just more work. It's so much easier when you're just yourself.
I'm so glad you said that, because even today when I do speaking engagements, I usually know my audience and I'll captivate most of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Even just recently, there were only like 50 women in the room, and I move, I get everybody up moving. Mm-hmm. I put a trampoline. I mean, it's a whole.
Oh my God, a trampoline. I need it.
And so many trampoline, I talk about, you know, movement, words, and laughter. And there's this one woman who came in late, and I could hear her out of my corner of her eye. And she looked not happy, let's say. Mm-hmm. And she is sitting right where I'm performing and saying, oh my God, does she really have to do all that to get her point across? Now, I could have let it go, Sarah. I could have been the bigger person. I could have just let it ride. But I didn't. And I said, yes, I do. I do. And then some. So you better put on some headset. And the place went crazy.
Yep.
I'm not saying that was my finest hour.
Oh, I applaud it.
You could have been a better person.
So I was speaking at it was a 2-day workshop for people who wanted to be public speakers. They want to be professional speakers.
Ooh.
And I was there speaking on a panel about podcasting for public speakers. And the first little piece of the workshop, we're all sitting at a table. We have tables of like maybe 6 people, and we have to give our elevator pitch of why someone would want to work with us.
Yeah.
So, and then after you give your pitch, you have 1 minute, and then you have 2 minutes to get feedback from the people at your table. I gave mine of just, I work with people on telling their stories and reaching their audiences and forming connections, all of that. And the feedback I got from one of the women, we'll call her Lisa, because that is her name. And what she said to me was, I am so much older than you. What do you possibly think you could teach me at your age?
Ooh.
I had several answers I wanted to give.
Yeah. Yeah.
Starting with like how to not be a word I can't say on podcasts.
Yeah.
But it was really like a important moment
yeah.
for me, because yeah. I learned a few things about myself right then. It's like, first, if you don't think I can teach you anything because of my age, then you are correct. Again, it is not my job to open closed minds. If you go through your day thinking that I can't learn from anybody that is not like my elder or my superior, you're not going to learn a lot. Like I said, I had my 1.5-year-old niece with me for 4 days. I learned things from her.
Absolutely.
Everything has an opportunity to learn. And it's not on me to make you understand that. But also, people think that the number, like your age, impacts what you have, like your value.
Mm.
And I was in my mid-20s working in the financial services industry. I've seen that. I've gone through it enough. I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not going to play that game.
Yeah.
So if I have something to teach you, it is because I am teaching it from my experience. You might have more years, but you don't have my experience. So it really made me realize that what we go through personally is our biggest assets, because that's where our stories come from. That's where our Absolutely. Value comes from. It doesn't yeah. matter how much more life you've lived if you haven't lived my life.
Ooh, that's a good one. That's right. And first of all, I believe there are people that I don't know what you call them, old souls, you know, have wisdom beyond their years, but you meet people, you go, whoa. And it doesn't matter. You're like, oh my God, like, where is this coming from? You are one of those people. And it wouldn't matter what age, you have wisdom beyond wisdom, and you just feel like an old soul, an amazing soul. My son, who's 21, he, every day since he was little, I used to say to him, you make me want to be a better person. You teach me something about how to live life every single day. I just tune into him because that's who he is as a human being. There are people that are 70 or 80 that are wise and they have all these great stories. And there's people like, yeah, I don't want to learn those lessons. You can see that you genuinely want to help people. Like, you love what you do. And I'm not saying you don't want to make money, but every single ounce of your being exudes that you are here to give as well as receive. And I wish I could hug you. All right, let's get professional. Here we go.
So say why? Never.
I'm kidding. I always will be a big goofball. I don't care how old I am. I get all the time, like, at your age, what? Like, why? That would be boring. Play more. Go have fun.
You know? Yes. We start dying the moment we stop playing.
Yeah. I had to visit a client, and young girl, she was in her 20s, and her mom,
young, such a baby.
Yeah. Such a baby. And her mom, I've never met me. And she's like, oh my God, look, she's so cute. And I go, that was, it was great. And I was telling my friend that, and she's like, oh my God, you're a powerful businesswoman. You don't want to be known as cute. I'm like, I'm taking cute. I'll be good with cute. I'm adorable.
Are you kidding? I'm adorable.
What? Yeah, I'm good. Listen, I'm 64. I'm good with adorable and cute. You know,
by the time this airs, I'll be 29. And I would still hope to be adorable.
It's just me. Like, that's my personality. I'm not, like, sophisticated. All right. We're going to have to wrap up. Son of a bean. All right. So here's the deal. Let's just make sure. I think, people, if you have more questions, you can reach out to Sarah.
Or let's do a part two. Come on.
Part two. Yeah. Because we have nothing to talk about. Right. All right. So let's talk about your ideal client for your production company and how they would reach out to you. Let's start there.
Okay. So the production side is that is a company called Branded Media. And we work with businesses or entrepreneurs who want to build their brand through podcasting. So we launch a podcast for them. And it's really anybody who just doesn't want to do the old, tired marketing plans and who want to really lean into authenticity and become the face and the voice of their brand. Because people don't want to interact with a company. They don't want to interact with a logo. They don't want to interact with people. So when you're willing to put yourself out as that person and as that face and really just be yourself in public, and one podcast episode can give you like a month's worth of social media content. So if you want to have that really content heavy marketing plan and really have those authentic messages, and podcasting is based in storytelling, which drives connections and drives trust. So when you want to really connect with your audience and build that trust with them so that they want to work with you, podcasting really is one of the best ways to do it. So anyone who wants to do that, we are happy to work with.
Now, tell us a little bit more about your book. Open this book, baby.
Open this book. Yes, that I published under my other company, which is Favorite Daughter. And Open This Book, it is a book / memoir / journal. It is very unique and I am incredibly proud of it. I walk through all the different ways that we tell our stories, the different types of stories that we tell, and in what context we should tell these different types of stories, and then how to find your stories, how to figure out which ones you should be telling, how to get past imposter syndrome, how to get into the mindset of you're an expert in your topics, all of these different ideas that go into telling stories as someone who wants to be a thought leader. So whether it's publicly or just within your company, if you want to be a thought leader, you need to tell stories. So I teach the concepts through telling my own story so that it's very understandable and digestible. And then I give journal exercises after every chapter so you can write your own stories and start really writing things down and just getting your ideas out. And it was almost like therapy to write it. Putting all of this stuff down and everything. But what I've really loved in the 2 months that it's been out, what people have told me the most is that they can hear me in the pages. Awesome. And the way that I wrote it is the way that I speak.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was asked, like, is that a conscious decision? Like, no, it would have had to be a conscious decision to do it any other way. So yeah. It's really easy to read. It's really engaging. It's like, it's dad jokes and just like who I am just in a book. So I'm really proud that it came out the way that I wanted it to. And it is fully illustrated by an amazing illustrator. And yeah, it's been out for 2 months.
Where can I find it?
It is on Amazon. If you just search for Open This Book, The Art of Storytelling for Aspiring Thought Leaders, or you can go to openthisbook.com. And if you want to get the journal entries by themselves as a little exercise to start telling your story, I did take them out and make them available for free. So you can download them at openthisjournal.com.
Cool. Sarah, I'm so happy we met.
Me too.
And I'm glad you came on the show. Is there anything we didn't get in that you want to say to the peeps around the world?
Oh, goodness. One more question that I'll answer real fast from your list of questions.
Okay.
I'll be quick.
Okay. All right. Let's go, John. Ready? John wants to know, dear Sarah, does it really matter the length of your story? I've been working with people on telling my story and they said to keep it to 5 to 7 minutes.
It depends on the context. Where are you telling it? Who are you telling it to? How much time do you have for your entire session? Are you writing it down? Are you speaking it? If it's a podcast where you're not the host, keep it short because it's their show. They need time to talk to you. But it just base it on where you're telling it and why. But also, you need to have a lot of details in order to make a story compelling, but focus only on the important ones. Your story might be feeling long because you have details you do not need. So pay attention to where you're kind of losing your audience. And like, my mother is the queen of too many details. She can't tell me a story in less than like 37 minutes. And I have backstories on every person that makes any guest appearance. Mm-hmm. You don't need that. Just stick to the details that matter, that will help the person follow the plot line, and omit the rest.
My son and husband say, you're so concise when you speak. Can't you tell us a story like you're on stage? Because
every time my mother tells me a story,
yeah,
it's, I don't know how it ends most of the time because has rambled off for too long. And I now know the backstory of this person that I was like, do I need to know this? It's important. He comes up later. He never comes up. All I know is he was there. I did not need to know his life story. And so no, she is the CEO of too many details. And every time she tells me a story, I'm just like, have you read my book yet?
Hey, the family's the last people you get to. Right?
I know she bought 10 copies, but I'm like, have you read it?
Yeah. Well, has she applied it? Let's go with that one. Yeah.
Not yet.
All right, Sarah, how can they find you? Tell us everything.
Everything. If you go to openthisjournal.com, you can download that, the free journal, and you'll find all of my contact info, social media, email services, everything right on there.
Beans. All right, my let's keep it real people. Come on. I know this is going to be one of your favorites. So Sarah and I would really appreciate you sharing, liking it, and rating it. It really, 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 really does matter. And you know what I'm going to say? Thank you, Sarah. And until next time, toodles.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.